WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you, right now. The Healthy Planet radio show focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. Now, every so often, a technology comes along that is so superior to what had previously existed that it inevitably makes the old technology a lot less desirable. The topic of this show is one of those technologies. It's one of the more exciting and important technology changes that we're now collectively adopting in our daily lives. It not only makes our lives easier, but can save us a bunch of cash and can very significantly reduce the pollution in our communities. And I can now speak with firsthand authority and experience on this topic because as of the last couple of years, I'm benefiting from the use of this newish technology, whose sales are growing exponentially, having more than tripled in the last 3 years. As I was preparing for this show yesterday, I asked my wife what she thought our best purchases over the last few years were. And we agreed that at the very top of the list was the purchase of our 2017 Chevrolet Bolt, an all-electric car. And that is the exciting technology that the show will be focused on. Now, if you think that I was overstating the superiority or benefit that I've experienced of electric vehicles over other gas vehicles, just listen in for the next hour while we break down the reasons for my excitement. Then you can judge for yourself. To be clear, there are certainly those who may not choose to drive an EV right now or for whom an EV doesn't make sense just yet. But for many of the rest of us who are or will be seeking a new or used car, there are many benefits to be had. And we'll be talking about those, as well as some of the recent developments in the adoption of EVs in our world, what resources are available for you, from tax credits to other incentives, that will make an EV purchase, that's electric vehicle purchase, potentially even less expensive than purchasing a gas vehicle. That's right. We'll also be examining, and in some cases debunking, some of the claims of the electric vehicle naysayers. And anytime you have any kind of new technology, there are going to be naysayers. And to help us navigate this exciting topic, I'm very fortunate to be joined by someone who has been promoting sustainable transportation alternatives for the past 17 years, and who possesses a wealth of knowledge about electric vehicles. Her name is Rosemary Mascali. She is a founder of the five-year-old Drive Electric Long Island EV Coalition and chair of its Education and Outreach Committee. Rosemary also co-chairs the Sustainable Transportation Committee of the U.S. Green Building Council, Long Island's chapter, another great organization. Drive Electric Long Island's mission is to accelerate the adoption of electric vehicles and EV charging infrastructure on Long Island. And Rosemary's committee focuses on electric vehicle education for Long Island residents and workers. So she is the perfect person to guide us on this radio exploration. Rosemary Mascali, thank you for joining us on The Healthy Planet.
Bob, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to our discussion.
As am I. So I'm going to start out by asking you to explain to our listeners why shifting our vehicles from gas to electric is so important, both to those living on Long Island, but also for the health of everybody on the globe, and of course, for the protection of our life support system on this planet.
Well, electric vehicles are important because they're replacing a technology with the internal combustion engine that damages our air. It projects a lot of greenhouse gases, which is affecting our climate. And both of those are affecting our health. So if I take it locally to Long Island, we have an F in air quality in Suffolk County. And the only reason we don't know for sure in Nassau County, because it's not measured on the ground level ozone. But that's because we have 2.1 million cars on Long Island, and they're spewing all kinds of bad emissions. And when the summer gets hot, like it's been, those emissions start mixing with the heat and creating this ground level ozone, which is very problematic for sensitive groups. And we saw with the recent smoke coming from Canada that mixed with particulate matter coming from other sources really became unhealthy for all of us. And I think that really was a wake-up call that the air quality is so important. We're all focused on reducing greenhouse gases. On Long Island, we see the impact of rising seas, stronger storms, with Sandy. And Long Island has 28% of its greenhouse gases is from transportation. So if you're serious about reducing greenhouse gases, you can't do it without electrifying transportation.
Absolutely not. And there's a health aspect. We did a show a couple of weeks ago that was all about the immense dangers posed by air pollution. We discussed the wildfires. And the American Lung Association's annual State of the Air report outlined what they called the terrible 10 health risks from breathing polluted air. And that's from ozone and particulate pollution. And just to quickly go through those 10, this is very serious business, which causes millions of deaths around the world, as well as up to, according to estimates, 360,000 in the United States alone. And those terrible 10 are premature death, asthma attacks, cardiovascular disease from heart attacks to stroke, lung cancer, developmental damage, susceptibility to infections, especially in children, worsens COPD symptoms, lung tissue swelling and irritation, low infant birth weight, wheezing, coughing, and shortness of breath, and new research is uncovering links between the air we breathe and mental health concerns. So the more science looks at air pollution, the more they find that it poses a very serious threat to our health. And I mention all that because it's important that we collectively understand that regardless of our political affiliations, it's in all of our best interest to reduce air pollution from the burning of fossil fuels in much the same way as we're all on the same page regarding our desire to reduce the health impacts of smoking cigarettes. Nobody would disagree with that, right? And FYI, the fumes from cigarettes contain many of the same toxins as the fumes that come out of your car's exhaust pipe. And think about it, you would never sit in your garage with the car running because in very short order, you would not be breathing. Rosemary, your organization, Drive Electric, has been publishing a report entitled The State of Electric Vehicles on Long Island. It talks about the fact that a significant percentage of Long Island's air pollution comes from gas vehicle exhaust, as you just mentioned, and that perhaps the most realistic strategy to reaching our air quality and greenhouse gas goals is to aggressively move to electrify transportation. And that's the task that Drive Electric Long Island has taken on. So with that said, I'll ask you to preface our conversation on the details about EVs by giving our listeners a thumbnail sketch of the state of electric vehicles on Long Island and what progress you've seen in recent years regarding the willingness of Long Islanders to switch from old vehicles, the gas vehicles, to something that's almost entirely new.
We're actually a great market for electric vehicles. Long Island has about 15% of the population in New York State, but we have about 27% now of the EVs on Long Island. Part of that is because we have more cars. We have 21% of the cars, but 27% of the EVs. So why is that? Why is Long Island such a great market for EVs? One is because we have a high percentage of single family homes. 82% of our housing units are single family homes, which are very convenient for charging electric vehicles. We also compact in that most people can get to their work, to their school, to their their pleasure events, staying on Long Island. So between Nassau and Suffolk distance, you've got the whole island's 120 miles, but less even with Nassau and Suffolk. Say 100 miles east to west and 20, 30 miles at the most north south. So the range on EVs today, the typical EV is at least 250 miles of range. So you can easily do all the things that you want to do with a single charge. And then when you get home, plug in your car and it's all set to go in the morning. So there are some locations like within New York City where there's a higher percentage of multifamily units, whether it's apartment buildings or condos and co-ops, where charging is a little bit more of a challenge. But on Long Island, we're a great market. We're also a great market because a lot of people embrace solar, and solar and EVs go hand in hand.
Yeah, it's a marriage made in heaven. We've got solar panels and we've got an EV. And so instead of just charging your car and using the grid, which there are benefits to anyway, it's charging off the sun's energy created by the solar panels. That's, you know, really every house where that can have that in the future will have that. It's that good. Who would choose the house?
The only reason I have a slate roof, so unfortunately I can't go solar, but I'm jealous for all you that can.
Yeah. Well, I was in a house with no sunshine for many years. In the last 10 years, that changed. And one of the first things I did was put those solar panels on the roof. And again, one of the best decisions we've made in this house since we moved in. Mm-hmm. So while electric vehicles are now on everybody's radar, they're in the news, and just about every automobile manufacturer is announcing major shifts away from gas-burning vehicles and toward electric, those who don't own one yet might not have considered the specific advantages of driving an electric car. And you might not know that until you actually own a car. So Rosemary, I'm going to ask you point by point to give us your expert insights into how gas vehicles compare to electric vehicles. And I'm going to ask you to start out with performance. So that is, how do electric cars compare to internal combustion engines? And what other performance advantages do they offer that a driver would actually feel in day-to-day driving?
That's one of the things I love about my EV is the acceleration that you get. So I'll look at performance from that standpoint. So I have a Hyundai Kona. It's a very affordable, you know, EV. It's not one of the high-end ones that you'd expect in the luxury market. You've got great performance on both sides, whether it's EVs or internal combustion engine. But in my, you know, affordable, moderate priced car, when that was a gas car, I would have to deal with a little slower acceleration. So if I got onto the highway or had to pass a vehicle, you know, when you hit the gas and the car takes a couple of seconds while it goes through its gears and transmission to gets up to the speed you want. With an EV, there is instant torque. So when you press the accelerator, it goes. And it's just a wonderful feeling to know that you can just get on the highway and get past or get, you know, around cars. It's different. And it's one of the performance things I like best about the EVs. They're also quiet. You don't realize it until you're in a car that's not making a lot of background noise, that you don't have to talk loud when you're talking to someone in the car, that the music sounds better because you're not competing, but you have it at a good decibel level. My car, each EV is a little different, but mine has a sound that it generates so that when it's at low speeds, it's not sticking up on someone. But
they're that quiet.
Are totally quiet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it's true about what you said about performance. It is a marked difference between a gas car and an EV. And our EV is also one of the lowest price EVs there is, but it is fast. And I mean fast off the line. And that is the difference between torque and horsepower. You know, I've heard a lot of people saying, I want my V8 500 horsepower. And, you know, off the line, you're not going to be as fast as an EV. And really, we never do travel 150 miles per hour. So that horsepower doesn't make a big difference very often, but torque and that ability to start quickly, that makes a difference in daily driving. It makes it safer to drive because you can avoid hazards. You can merge more easily. So it's very good. Very good. If you haven't driven an electric car, do it and you'll see what we mean. You're listening to Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We're speaking with Rosemary Mascali, a founder of the Drive Electric Long Island EV Coalition and chair of its Education and Outreach Committee. And the topic of the day is everything about electric cars, things you haven't known about them and things you should know about this emerging, newish technology that is coming into its own. You can find out more about her efforts and Drive Electric Long Island's work on this topic at driveelectriclongisland.org. So let's move to maintenance costs. How do the maintenance costs of EVs compare to those of gas vehicles?
Well, I'll put it in two categories. One is the fuel costs, which maybe we'll wait and talk about, but the maintenance costs is greatly impacted by the fact that EVs have many, many fewer parts than an internal combustion engine. In order to move a gas car, you've got spark plugs, you've got carburetors, you've got, I like to say, catalytic converters that won't get stolen on an EV because it doesn't have one. So there's been studies that show that over the 10-year ownership of an EV, you can save about $5,000 in maintenance costs because there's no oil changes, there's no spark plug changes, there's no transmission problems because there's not really a transmission in an EV. So over the life of your ownership, you really save a lot on maintenance. And then I'll get to the fuel savings. Electric cars are much more efficient than gas cars. Internal combustion engine, only about 20% of the gas that you use actually goes to turning the wheels. The rest is kind of wasted in heat and in driving the other components. Whereas an electric vehicle, it's closer to 70%. And then you get a bunch of it back with regenerative braking. So the efficiency is up to 90%. So, you know, if you think about it, you're putting this fuel in the car and in a gas car, and 80% of it's just going out the window and up into the air and polluting us. Whereas with an electric vehicle, it's moving the car, and then with the feature, which I'll talk about next, of regenerative braking.
Yeah, I love that. Yes.
It's just amazing. when you slow down the car, instead of that energy being wasted and just wearing down your brakes, the EV is recapturing that energy into the battery. And it just makes so much sense. How many times I'm on the LIE driving and, you know, you get stop and go traffic and you see the cars, you know, braking ahead of you with stop and go. And with an EV, I just come off the accelerator and the car slows itself down and takes that energy and recharges the battery. So my vehicle has an average miles per gallon equivalent of 120 miles per gallon. On the highway, it's 108. In city driving, it's 132. It's crazy. It's backwards. We're usually thinking, you're worrying about, oh, am I going to have enough gas if I get into traffic? With an IE, if you're in traffic, you're like, all right, go an extra 10 miles because it's recapturing all that energy as you slow down the vehicle.
Yeah. And when I say EVs are better, it's not really an opinion because they are the things you've mentioned, so many fewer parts, so much more efficient. And with efficiency comes cost savings. And so much of that better technology, like using your brakes in regular cars, creating heat, and it's a total loss of energy versus putting that energy back into your power supply. It's just simply better. It's the next step.
Yeah. And you mentioned it being a new technology. It's not really a new technology.
Right.
What's new is the battery innovations or whatever that have allow us to go the distances that we need to go on an affordable battery. But EVs have been around since the beginning of the cars. They got pushed aside when the Model Ts came out and they were, you know, cheaper at the time. They could go further. And then when the highway system started to get built, people wanted to go farther distances and the batteries just didn't store the amount of energy that was needed back then. But through the innovations over the years, the cost of battery batteries have really come down, and that's where it's really, you know, an affordable, superior option.
That really is. And even for those who don't want to spend a lot of money, and we'll get into this in a little bit, the car that we have is a much less expensive electric vehicle, and it's rated for 259 miles on a charge, I think it is. However, during summers, we've gotten as high as 400 plus miles. And look, this is a low cost car. So, you know, things are coming. And everything that we're talking about today is the worst it will ever be. We have to keep that in mind, from the infrastructure that charges your vehicle to the quality and the longevity of the battery to the amount of charge that it takes and how long it takes to charge. We are at the worst time ever. And it's really great already.
Right. It's going to get better.
Yeah. On Long Island, there's another way that owning an EV can actually cut your commute time significantly compared to driving a gas-powered vehicle. And it has nothing to do with how fast it is off the line. And it does have to do with the clean pass vehicles. Talk about that, Rosemary.
Yeah, if you have a either a plug-in hybrid or a full electric vehicle, you can get a clean pass sticker, put it on your car, and you get access to the HOV lane, which I love too.
Yeah.
Even if you don't have multiple people in the car when you're driving alone.
Right. Yes, you can do it alone. Yes.
Right. Now, that is planned to expire in September of 2025. The reason for that is the HOV lane was funded with federal funds, and the Clean Pass program was in place because the lane was not at its capacity to keep. It has to be at a certain level faster than the rest of the lanes. So they were able to accommodate Clean Pass vehicles because it basically accomplishes some of the task of some of the reason for the HOV lane, which was improving air quality. But when there are enough EVs on the road such that that lane slows down, then it's going to go back to being a regular, you know, high occupancy vehicle lane, because the intention of creating that lane was not only to improve air quality, but to reduce traffic congestion. So by, you know, if you have a lane that's not moving faster than the others, then it's not accomplishing what it has. So being someone that has promoted sustainable transportation for the last umpteen years, I agree with that, even though I personally would love to continue to use the lane.
Yeah.
I am a believer in promoting carpooling as well. So if you have an EV, you can still use it if you have somebody else in the car.
Right. Should make two HOV lanes.
Well,
and then eventually the whole highway will be HOV.
Yeah.
So before we go into talking about charging and range anxiety and all that, is there anything else you'd like to add regarding the benefits of an EV over a internal combustion engine car?
Well, just the fact that it is a zero tailpipe emission vehicle. So one way you can always tell if a car is an EV or not is look for the tailpipe. It doesn't have any. There's no tailpipe because there's no tailpipe emissions. And I just had my car inspected, and the inspection was $10 because they didn't have to do an emissions test because there are no emissions. We'll probably get into a discussion about the comparison between the emissions of an EV with the source of the electricity and the like. And there are some emissions if you look at that it takes some forms of power to create the electricity in the first place. But if you're looking
feel free to go into that now, by the way.
Okay. So depending on how the electricity is being generated, there are some emissions that are related to using an EV. Despite that, even if you are in parts of the country where it's all, you know, big percentage of coal plants, which is not what we have in New York, it's still lower emissions with EVs because of the efficiency of the engines and the 20% I mentioned before of the ICE engines and the 80% on the. So if those efficiencies are at the power plant as well, then that's kind of coming through. The power plant can create that electricity more efficiently than a car can. But there's two aspects that we look at. One is the greenhouse gases and the emissions from the plants, and then there's the local emissions in your neighborhood as you're driving around on the highway off that, which really gets to a transportation equity issue that says, if we're spewing all this around to our neighbors, then driving an EV reduces those emissions at the local level. And a lot of asthma and COPD is the local air pollution. And the minute you start driving an EV, you're not contributing to that local local pollution.
Right. And that's the air that you and your family breathes. And it's also the air that you're all breathing when you drive on the highway. All of those cars spewing emissions and everybody who's driving, breathing them in. So it's really a wonderful thing to think that a portion and a growing portion of those cars are stopping the whole process of taking fossil fuels, burning them and causing thousands upon thousands of explosions in the engine and having the exhaust from those explosions come out the tailpipe. It was a great technology. I mean, it was ingenious when it came out, but its time has come. It's now we have to address, because we have alternatives, we have to address the real serious dangers that come from all those emissions.
And then the other thing to consider, and I like to discuss with people, is when you buy a car today, let's say you buy a regular gas car, that you might be using that car for 3 years if you lease it, or 5 years, or 10 years. But these cars, are a lot of them are on the road for 15 to 20 years. So if you put even one more gas car on the road, you're committing that that's the only way that car is going to be able to drive is with fossil fuels. Whereas if you buy an EV today, New York actually has a good mix of nuclear, renewable, and gas as opposed to coal kind of thing. So we're a fairly clean grid right now. But over time, that 15 to 20 years that car's on the road, it's going to get cleaner and cleaner because New York has committed to going 100% renewable and it's electric grid.
That's right.
So I tell people, if you're not ready for an EV, then hold on to your gas car. Don't put another one on the road, because you're just going to give that one to somebody else who's going to keep driving, and you're going to put another one on the road that's going to be there for another 15, 20 years.
Right. And we don't have 15, 20 years in terms of the way our climate is changing. It's nothing that any of us have to tell anybody anymore. You watch the news, you see what's happening, things are changing. And it was predicted and it was expected amongst the experts, and now it's with us. So now it needs to be addressed, and we need to do everything we can as soon as we can.
I think it also gives people a sense of empowerment that they're doing something. Because, you know, there's one approach you can take to say, oh, well, the world is big, and what do we make a difference if our little thing? But on a per capita basis, we have pretty big carbon footprints.
No, we do.
We really do. And so if it's hard to look elsewhere, you know, and throw stones when we're not doing something ourselves.
Yeah.
And this is an easy thing to do. It's just got so many other benefits.
It's so easy. And, you know, that is the way I find with a lot of environmental actions that are good for everybody. They're also good for us, like eating a diet that is low carbon. That's vegetables and fruits and grains and that type of thing. And that helps our bodies as well as the world. So it's usually, as far as I've seen, a win-win. It's just that we have resistance. There's a natural resistance to change. And we ascribe different motivations to the people who are creating the change in the world that makes people very confused. I read some message boards about EVs, and really some of the comments by people who don't like EVs range from it's not as good for the environment as the other cars, which is ridiculous, to it's a way of taking over the world and controlling us. And I heard the same thing when we were talking about getting off of incandescent bulbs. But the great thing is that it makes so much sense that the world does adopt things that make so much sense, whether it takes a little longer than we'd like or not. That's a different story, but it does happen. I have faith.
Yeah.
So this is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. I'm speaking with Rosemary Mascali, a founder of the Drive Electric Long Island EV Coalition. She's been promoting sustainable transportation alternatives for the past 17 years and is guiding us through an exploration of the state and benefits of electric vehicles. You can find out more about her efforts and Drive Electric Long Island's work on this exciting topic at driveelectriclongisland.org. That's driveelectriclongisland.org. So now let's shift a little bit and talk about charging and range anxiety. And I've heard those who don't own electric vehicles voicing concerns about not being able to find a place to charge their car. And speaking from our EV experience, my wife has a medium length commute that used to require filling her tank every week. A lot of money, a lot of pollution. Now with our EV, we never need to go to a gas station. Never. That's with a big capital N. We simply plug in the car when we need to at home, and our solar powered electricity fills up our car. So Rosemary, I'm going to ask you to discuss the range of EVs compared to that of gas vehicles and address some of those fears that many local commuters have of not being able to find places where they can charge their vehicle.
There is a lot of fear about that, but I think that especially for Long Islanders, it's media driven in terms of, you know, what they're reading about EVs than an actual real problem for the majority of us on the island. And as I mentioned earlier, we have 82% single family homes. The most convenient and the most inexpensive method of charging is at home overnight, just like you charge your smartphone. The end of the day, you plug it in the morning, it's full. And you don't have to charge it every day. It depends on your use patterns. I'll discuss a little bit about how do you charge an EV? A lot of people don't know the basics. Yeah. So there are three basic ways to charge an EV. They're described in terms of levels. So there's a level one, a level two, and a DC fast charge. The level one and level two are options that you could typically do at home or in a workplace, or there might be a destination location like a hotel or a park where you can find these charging options. The level one is you're just your regular 110 outlet. You have them all around your house. You have them in your garage. Level two is a 240 volt, which is like what you typically use for a major appliance, like a dryer. It provides more electricity than your regular 110, you know, outlet would. The DC fast charge is more equivalent, I'd say, to a gas station. It doesn't obviously give you gas, but it has much higher transmission of electricity. So you can charge much quicker. With some vehicles, as much as 80% of the charge of the battery in 15 minutes. How fast it takes you to charge depends on how full your battery was when you got there and your vehicle itself in terms of what it can accept in terms of charge. I'll come back to my 82% single family homes because it's the key statistic for Long Island. I got my EV a year ago. I have been charging on a 110 outlet. I have over 10,000 miles, 10,500 miles I just hit. I had gotten a type 2 charger. I just haven't gotten around to installing it. I wanted to know, you know, how, you know, just as a test kind of thing. And I happen to have a lower end kind of EV. It's a smaller car, so it's very efficient. And it will give me about 5 miles of charge per hour on a regular 110 outlet. If I plug it in by 8 o'clock at night, by 8 o'clock in the morning, I have 60 miles of charge. I don't drive 60 miles. So for me, it works out beautifully. If you have a larger, you know, there are many styles of EVs now. There are sedans, there are mini crossovers, there are pickup trucks, there are bigger SUVs. Depending on the efficiency of that vehicle, the 110 outlet might not be sufficient for you. And your use patterns. If you're driving every day, you know, 60, 70 miles a day, you might want to have a type 2 charger. That would involve, if you don't have that type of plug already, either in your garage or near your driveway. By the way, you don't have to charge in a garage. It's perfectly safe and perfectly designed to charge, you know, in the open air, in the rain, in the wind. It's totally safe. Then you can install that level two charger, and that'll give you between 20 to 30 miles of range per hour. One of the advantages of having a level two charger is that PSEG Long Island has introduced time of use rates. And during the off peak hours, you can pay for your kilowatt hours at a 40% discount. So if you are charging in a more condensed time during that off peak, then those hours will be charged at the 40% discount, which is great.
That's a big discount.
It's a big discount.
Yeah.
So getting back to range anxiety, most EVs today have at least 250 miles of range. There are others that are in the 300 up to 500 miles of range. What do you need? It depends on your use case. If you're driving the typical 40, 50 miles per day, 250 miles of range is plenty. If you go on longer trips, you'll want to use DC fast charge locations that are on the corridors, on the highway corridors, and they're typically at locations that have a rest stop. So you could plug in your car, go to the restroom, get a bite to eat, and it would typically be in the 15 minutes to 45 minutes kind of range, depending on your car, to fill that up to 80%. Now, the reason that 80% gets quoted is that car batteries don't charge on a linear line. There's a battery management system that's protecting the battery. So if you're at a lower state of charge, it is charging pretty rapidly. But as it gets hotter, at the hotter end, it slows it down to protect the battery. So typically, you could wait there and try to get it up to 100%, but it's going to be slower that last 10, 20%. So you more likely take it up to 80, keep driving, and then stop somewhere else where it'll be a faster charge during that time. But people ask me too, well, how do you know where all these charging stations are? There are a lot of tools that both the car that sells in some models of cars and in other apps. There's the PlugShare app, the Chargeway app, there's the Alternative Fuel Data Center app, that's more online tool that will tell you where all the charging stations are. There, some of them are crowdsourced information that will tell you if they're up and running, what the costs are, what payment methods they take. It's all readily available. And once you have an EV and you drive it, you see it's very accessible.
Yeah. And those resources, by the way, will be listed on the archive page for this show. And there are a lot of resources on driveelectriclongislands.org. And also, it will be on our Facebook page at Healthy Planet USA on Facebook, Healthy Planet USA, with the events that will be put up on Friday. I interviewed Joel Levin of Plug In America a couple of years ago, and he talked about that tool that you mentioned, that which is at plugstar.com, that helps prospective buyers of EVs determine what vehicle fits their particular needs, not just across the board, but the amounts that you drive every day, how often that you, so that will determine how much you need to charge at night, and what price range you're looking at, what rebates and incentives are available for your area. It's a great tool. And that's plugstar.com.
Right. Yeah. So there's one tool that will tell you where the charging stations are. That's PlugShare. And then PlugStar is a different tool.
That's right.
That will help you select the kind of EV that makes sense for you.
Right.
Great. It's a great tool.
Great tool. So let's talk a little bit about purchasing an electric vehicle. I've often heard the naysayers again saying that EVs are only for rich people. What are the facts about the price of EVs versus gas vehicles? And explain how the incentives can really make a difference and make this a really good time to purchase.
People often quote the average cost of an EV being so much higher than the average cost of an internal combustion engine. But that's because the market started up at the high luxury end. So there are a lot of expensive EVs out there, but that doesn't mean that you have to buy an expensive EV. If you do, then just like if you buy a luxury car that's a gas car, it's going to cost you more. There's an article I've just recently read of 9 EVs under 40,000. There are a number of very affordable EVs out there. I'll give you some examples. There's the Chevy Bolt. And the Chevy Bolt EUV that starts at $26,500. And that's not counting a $7,500 federal tax credit that you take away from that and a $2,000 New York State rebate. So you can get down under, well under $20,000 for a Bolt.
There's an amazing car. First-hand experience.
That has a range of 258 miles. So it's not like, then there's the Nissan Leaf that starts at $28,040. That one is not eligible for the federal tax credit, but it is eligible for the New York State rebate of up to $2,000. There's a new Chevy coming out, the Equinox, in 2024. It's supposed to be available this fall. That's going to start at $30,000. So it's a little bigger than the Bolt, if you're looking for a little bigger of a car. That's also eligible for the $7,500 federal tax credit and the $2,000 New York State rebate. So that gets that down under $20,000.
Wow.
Then there's the Mini Cooper SE that starts at $30,900. The Hyundai Kona, which starts at $33,550. There's a VW ID4 that starts at $38,995, and that is eligible for the federal tax credit of $7,500. Then the Kia Niro starts at $39,550. And even the Tesla Model 3, with their recent price reductions, now starts at $37,940. And the Tesla Model 3 is also eligible for the $7,500 federal tax credit and the $2,000 New York State credit. So there are many EVs that are up much higher than that, and they're, you know, in the luxury market. But there are many choices now in the more commuter market, affordable car kind of market. And even the cars that aren't eligible for the $7,500 federal tax credit, they are oftentimes, the dealer will provide you with lease incentives because the reason that some cars are eligible for that $7,500 and some are not is that Congress put some restrictions on it. They have to be assembled in North America, and they have to have a certain percentage of their critical minerals and battery components sourced either in North America or from our trade allies. So the way that some manufacturers are getting around that is that there is a corresponding commercial tax credit of $7,500. So the manufacturers and their leasing companies are buying it as a commercial vehicle and then passing it along when they lease it to you. If you have your heart set on a car and you don't see it eligible for the $7,500, make sure you go in and talk to your dealer and ask them about lease credits.
Very interesting.
They're calling it, yeah. And it can substantially bring down your lease payment.
I'll also mention, don't forget about used cars. We bought our car used. You can buy a used EV. So it's really misleading to say that EVs are for the rich and famous, because like any other car, you know, if you are someone who buys used cars, I've never bought a new car in my life. If you're someone who buys used cars, you buy a lower cost used car EV, and they're getting to the point where they are low cost and they get great range.
And on top of it, there's a new federal tax credit, which for used cars as well, as long as you buy it through a dealer, of $4,000. So you can bring down the cost even more, even on a used EV.
Right. You're listening to Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We're speaking with Rosemary Mascali, a founder of the Drive Electric Long Island EV Coalition and chair of its Education and Outreach Committee. The Drive Electric Long Island Coalition is dedicated to encouraging and accelerating the adoption of electric vehicle usage and charging infrastructure on Long Island through advocacy, education, and outreach efforts to local municipalities, companies, residents, and industry stakeholders. Rosemary has been promoting sustainable transportation alternatives for the past 17 years and is with us to help you understand the many benefits of owning an electric vehicle. You can find out more about her efforts and Drive Electric Long Island's work on this exciting topic at driveelectriclongisland.org. That's driveelectriclongisland.org. Let's address a couple more of those commonly voiced concerns about owning an electric car. Some of those are put forth, as I mentioned, in response to statements about electric cars being environmentally friendly. And one of those issues that people talk about is the critical mineral sourcing for the production of batteries. How big of an issue is that? And are there solutions on the horizon?
The critical minerals in battery come from various countries. There are some child labor issues in cobalt with the sourcing of it from Republic of Congo. But in those cases, a lot of these are artisanal mines, where families are drawn to the income they can get from it. And there are a lot of focus on trying to address those issues. The way I look at it is, you know, there was abuse that happened over the years with all, you know, whether it's diamonds or other things. People are very cognizant of this being a sustainable transportation option, and they're looking for all the ways for that to be sustainable and not, you know, do that from the beginning, working it in, whether it's your recycling of the batteries, it's all being worked in because it's knowledgeable, and no one's trying to get away with something here. They're trying to solve any issues. The other thing is with these incentives, there's been a lot of investment in building battery factories and this, looking at other alternate sources of these critical minerals, both from a national security standpoint. And most of the minerals are being sourced where they are based on where the market was. But as this market really moves, it's still in a nascent phase, that these sourcing and other locations will develop as the market demands them. So there's even a project out of Berkshire Hathaway, where there's a demonstration facility in California, in Imperial County, to test the commercial viability of their sustainable lithium extraction method, where there's all this lithium there, and they process it from geothermal brine. So they're using the geothermal energy to extract lithium, and they're, you know, there's, it's viewed as some of the largest deposits of lithium in the world. So market demand spurs innovation. And even in terms of the chemistries of batteries, you know, if there are certain mineral components that are high cost because they're in low supply or have some negative connotation to them, there's all kinds of research going on for alternative battery chemistries that don't use those minerals. So I think that it's encouraging that people are focusing on the end goal of sustainable battery sourcing and battery chemistries. And there's a lot of research and funding for research that'll just make that, as you said before, we're at the worst it's going to be. It's only going to get better.
This is the worst it will ever be. Plus, yeah, the people who are thinking about this are the people who care most about the environment. So the focus is very different than when gas powered cars came out. That was, you know, manufacture cars to get people on the road, get them traveling, get rid of the horses. And this is very different. This is different. The answer to an issue that we have to solve. And so all right. eyes are on the solution. And right. that's another concern that's brought up by people who are naysayers. They say that EV production actually creates more greenhouse gases than the production of internal combustion vehicles. Talk about that. By the way, we're in lightning rounds now because we've only got about 5, 6, 7 minutes left.
Okay. So there is more greenhouse gas in the production of the batteries, but some studies looking at how that does over the life of the vehicle, within a year of driving, you've made up that difference because there's so much emissions from the use of the vehicles that you don't have when you're using the vehicles in EVs. So that's a bad comparison.
Very good. Another concern is that you might save money by buying an EV car and using it and not spending it on gas, but there's a big expense you're going to have to bear when your battery dies. So talk about the life expectancy of car batteries, and as well as the cost of replacing them compared to the cost of maintaining a gas car and fixing, as you mentioned, the transmission and other parts.
Yeah. The batteries have, by law, to have at least a 8-year, 100,000-mile warranty. So my first talk to people is, if something should happen to your battery, you're under warranty for all that time. They're finding now that the batteries are lasting longer than they even thought it was. There is a little bit of degradation in the battery. It's typically about 1, maybe 2% per year, not necessarily linear either. Some years not. But so at the end of 10 years, it's not like your battery is going to die and you have to replace it. It might be that instead of getting 250 miles of range, you might get 200 miles of range. So it's still very usable, but slightly degraded. Other people bring up, well, what happens with all those batteries when you do have to replace them?
Exactly. Yes.
From a recycling standpoint, batteries are very valuable, and recycling works when the product you're trying to recycle has value, because then it's worth it to use it in something. So what they're looking at now, and really there isn't a ton of recycling going on because there aren't a ton of failing batteries that have to be replaced. But for power storage, they complement to solar installations to reserve power, for times when the sun isn't shining. They can.
This is after they're used in EVs. After their useful life in EVs is gone, they can then be used for
reused
to power
for
homes.
That.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They can be used for powering lights on highways. They can use the individual components. They can even smelt down the batteries to their critical mineral components. And again, all of these components are valuable. So it makes the work that you need to do to recycle it worth it. And that's really what comes down to it.
Right.
So you're not going to see a lot of EV batteries in landfills. They're just too valuable.
Perfect. People are concerned about EV fires. Is it a concern over gas vehicles?
Any fire is of a concern. And our fire departments are training on this, newer technology and the like. But Tesla, who's been around the longest in terms of their number of EVs out there and how long they've been out there, and they reported 5 cars per billion miles traveled. So this is a very rare occurrence, as compared to 55 fires per billion miles for a gas car. So you've got 10 times as many fires in gas cars. And I don't remember seeing many you hear about it sometimes. There was a gas fire, but it's just not a very often occurrence. You hear of accident and crashes, but the cars going on fire in general. So you've got a rare occurrence there, and it's even more rare in the EVs. And there's a reason for that. People hear about the batteries on the e-bikes and are saying, look at that. That's a lithium ion battery. But the fires that are happening on the e-bikes are very different than the batteries that are in EVs. First, the e-bike fires oftentimes are secondhand cars in the secondary market that aren't UL certified. They're sometimes being plugged multiple in an extension cord. So there are laws I know New York City put in place to make sure that now they have to be UL certified. They have to, have regulations for e-bikes. But EVs have a very sophisticated battery management system that manages how you're charging that battery. And within the components within the battery, there are all kinds of materials that are protecting it from any kind of thermal runaway or runaway kind of thing. So can an EV fire happen? Yes, we've all seen, when it does happen, it's all over the news. Right. But is it something that I'm concerned about? No.
All right. We've only got a couple of minutes left. Drive Electric holds public events. I understand there's one coming up. Talk about that.
Yes, we hold many events at libraries. We do EV 101 events where we provide about a 45-minute presentation about basics of EVs and EV charging. And then we have EV owners that come and just share their experience driving an EV. I like to say Long Islanders talking to other Long Islanders about what it's like to drive an EV. We have a big event that we'll be at a booth for this month at the Electrify Expo at the Nassau Coliseum. This is a national organization that comes to different cities, and it's a great opportunity for us on Long Island to test drive a number of EVs. There's going to be 9 different manufacturers there with 28 different cars that you can test drive. The event is outside. It's a festival type of environment, and I really encourage you to take advantage of it. We're also planning our own ride and drive at the Farmingdale State College on October 6th. That's part of an EV symposium there, where we'll be having some EV 101 sessions, some other breakout sessions with manufacturers and charging companies, and talking about multi-unit dwelling charging, and then having a ride and drive where you have an opportunity to test drive a car. And there's nothing like getting behind the wheel to really see what it's like, what it's about.
No, that is so right. Is there anything you feel like we've missed that you'd like to leave our audience with?
I would just say that don't be afraid of EVs. It's, at the end of the day, it's just a car. You get in it, you drive it, it does 90%, exactly what you do in your other car, but better. So get behind the wheel, give it a try. If you live in a multi-unit dwelling and charging is more of a challenge, we're working on that. We're doing some work. The New York State just came out with some incentives for multi-unit dwellings to reduce the cost of installing charging stations there. So we're working with different co-op associations, condos, multi-property owners to try to get charging at on-premise as well as DC fast chargers in your community. And then we're also working with workplaces in putting workplace charging, which is also an option for people who live in multifamily units. They can, you know, charge it while they're at work, and then they fill up there just in reverse.
30 seconds. What motivates you to do this work?
As I said before, I'm 17 years promoting sustainable transportation. For many of those years, I was promoting transit, and I loved it, you know, getting people to understand the transit system and use transit. But I didn't move the needle much because we love our cars on Long Island. And it just, I came to the conclusion that the only way that we're going to improve our air quality and fight climate change on Long Island with such a big percentage of our greenhouse gases from cars is to electrify transportation. And I've been promoting it ever since.
All right, great. Well, we're very happy that you've chosen to do this work and appreciate all the work that you do and Drive Electric Long Island does and the U.S. Green Building Council. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll
do
this again sometime.
Enjoyed it. Thanks.
Thank you. This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We've been speaking with Rosemary Mascali, a founder of the Drive Electric Long Island EV Coalition and chair of its Education and Outreach Committee. She's been promoting sustainable transportation alternatives for the past 17 years and has shared a wealth of information with us today. You can find out more about her efforts and Drive Electric Long Island's work on this exciting topic at driveelectriclongislands.org. That's driveelectriclongislands.org. And I'll be with you again at the same time on Friday, August 18th, and on the first and third Fridays of each month thereafter. And when I'm not here, stay tuned to hear more excellent natural alternatives programs with cutting-edge health, environmental, social justice issues, and so much more every Friday at this time. For more information on a healthy planet and our radio show, email us at info@healthyplanetusa.org. You can also visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Become an active participant in making our world a better place by considering purchasing an electric vehicle next time you buy a car. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four and multi-legged friends. And finally, remember to enjoy each moment of existence on this beautiful planet that we all share. Good night.
I am unwritten, can't read my mind, I'm undefined. I'm just beginning, the pen's in my hand, ending unplanned. Staring at the blank page before you, open up the dirty window, let the sun illuminate the words that you could not find. Reaching for something in the distance, so close you can almost taste it. Release your inhibitions, feel the rain on your skin. No one else can feel it for you, only you can let it in. No one else, no one else can speak the words on your lips. Drench yourself in words unspoken, live your begins, the rest is still unwritten. Yeah.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.
A stay in the hospital for people of all ages can be a stressful and challenging experience. But every day, teams of volunteers in UCLA's People Animal Connection, or PAC, make the lives of patients and their families better.
You see the patients get happier and more relaxed. They kind of forget that they're in a hospital bed.
The visits are provided to hospitalized patients without cost. Learn how you can get involved at uclahealth.org/PAC.